This is Only a Game. I'm Karen Given. Early last month, Natalia Melman Petrozella, a history professor at the New School in New York City, was walking around her apartment.
Just kind of procrastinating by checking Twitter, and I just saw that all of a sudden my whole timeline was retweets with, you know, various kind of enthusiastic commentaries about, oh my God, I can't believe Nike's doing this.
This was the moment when Colin Kaepernick, the former Super Bowl starting quarterback, now better known for protesting racial inequality, was announced as the new face of Nike's Just Do It campaign.
Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything.
But while people in Natalia's timeline expressed surprise that Nike had aligned itself with such a controversial figure, Petrozella had a different reaction.
I am a historian. I think historically, I'm always like, you know, where did this come from? And so having spent a lot of time looking at Nike's ads, my first thought was like, okay, this is totally part of this tradition of moving the needle with kind of controversial branding that places sports and athletics in the context of something bigger.
Only a Game's Martin Kessler takes it from here.
Natalia Melman Petrozella says Nike's tradition of socially conscious branding goes back all the way to the 70s.
When they released their first women's running line, they named the shoes after kind of all these like quasi-feminist sayings. So, you know, there's like the Liberator. Today it all seems kind of cheesy, like big deal, women's empowerment branding. But back then, you just didn't have a lot of that.
Nike has run ads featuring Paralympians, runners who are overweight or in their 80s. And in 1994, the company reached out to a man named Rick Munoz. They wanted to put him in a commercial. Here's Rick.
I said to myself, if they go through with this, it's just going to be unlike anything that anyone has ever seen before. Just Do It didn't really go into this territory. And then, you know, using a person nobody knew. Who is this guy? He's a nobody, but he's got a story to tell.
Rick Munoz has always had good handwriting. That's not why Nike wanted to feature him in a commercial, but it's a good place to start his story. Rick grew up in LA without his dad, without any siblings, without any grandparents, without any aunts and uncles, just him and his mom.
And you would think that there would be this super-duper closeness between the two of us. And it was actually the opposite. She didn't express affection. She just worked all day, came home, cooked dinner, and we went our separate ways.
So when Rick's teachers started telling him he had nice penmanship, it mattered.
The only people who could give me positive feedback were the teachers.
Rick focused more and more on his handwriting. About a decade and a half later, the same sort of thing happened when he started running. Rick was late to the sport. He was already in his 20s, but more experienced runners were quick to compliment him on his times.
All the positive feedback from it really fed me and made me see what I was capable of.
Rick ran his first marathon in 1983, then another in 1984, and another in 1985, then three in 1986. The early 80s is also when Rick first learned about HIV and AIDS.
It was bad. Close friends, acquaintances, people that I had, you know, had personal, you know, physical relations with, it was getting them. There was a men's group that I belonged to. We showed up one weekend. We said, oh, where's, I can't remember his name, you know, Larry. And they said, oh, you know, Larry found out he had AIDS and he swallowed a bottle of Drano. And everybody went, what? You know, it was just so shocking. One friend of mine went into the hospital on a Friday because he was feeling poorly. By Monday, 3 days later, he was dead. You know, that is how quickly the whole thing happened. And so I just said, I just have to wait. I guess I'm just going to wait for my turn to come.
In 1987, at age 28, Rick decided to get tested. He wasn't surprised when he got the results. Positive. So when you got the diagnosis, mm-hmm. did you feel like it was a death sentence?
I didn't look at it as a death sentence so much as a challenge. It's like, who's going to win, me or the condition? I pretty much just said, I'm just going to do what makes me happy for as long as I can, as best I can. And when it comes time for me to go, then I'm going to go.
And for Rick, what made him happy was running.
I'd come to love the marathon distance, you know, and training for a 26-mile race is a lot. The race itself is a lot. And there was a woman in our running club, and she was a doctor, and she said, you know, Rick, I don't think maybe you should lay off the marathons because that's really taxing on the body. And I said, yeah, you could be right, but I love this too much to let it go or to let it affect me. And I just kept running.
And Rick kept getting faster. In 1989, he ran 8 marathons. In 1990, he ran 9 and qualified for the Boston Marathon for the first time. Now, before we get to what happened next in Rick's story, I want to pause for a second to talk about the stigma associated with HIV and AIDS back in the 90s. In 1994, Sean Stroob started a magazine called Pause, as in positive. It was about people affected by HIV and AIDS.
We would put people in the cover of the magazine. We'd make them look glamorous. We'd have, you know, fashion photographers and makeup artists, and we were criticized for that, you know, glamorizing AIDS.
Stroob says his sister, who was the magazine salesperson, faced challenges landing ads.
She finally got an appointment with a big major brand vitamin company. And, you know, we had all the data on people with HIV who were consuming an enormous amount of vitamins. They told her, we market our vitamins to well people, not to sick people.
When people with HIV and AIDS were being talked about in the mainstream, they were usually being completely pathologized. That was the climate when Rick Munoz got a call in 1994 from someone at Wieden & Kennedy, Nike's ad agency. They said they wanted to do an ad about a marathon runner with HIV.
And I said, you're kidding. And he says, no, no, we're serious. And I said, but you're kidding. He said, no, we're not. He goes, yeah, it's going to be a national commercial. And we were wondering if you'd be interested in doing it. And I said, does Nike know this? And then he said, yes, they're the ones who told us to do it. You know, and I said, oh, okay. If you think it's a good idea, count me in. There were people who said to me, you're really putting yourself out there. What about your job? What about future jobs? The whole world is going to know that you're HIV positive. You could get discriminated for your housing, for this and that. I said, I'm willing to take the risk.
3 weeks later, as he ran through Malibu Canyon State Park in front of a camera crew, Rick's biggest concern was whether he looked like a dork. After filming, Rick still worried that Nike would ultimately decide to pull the ad. But on February 9th, 1995, as he sat alone in his apartment watching that night's episode of ER, Rick saw himself appear on his TV screen.
It's got the music in the background, and it's got me running towards the camera and then running along the trail, and they flash my name on a title card. You know, Rick Munoz, Los Angeles, 10 marathons per year. And then at the very end, it says, HIV positive. Just do it. The impact was very immediate. You know, within the next 2 or 3 days, you know, stories in the New York Times praising it.
It sent a signal.
That's Pause Magazine founder Sean Stroob again.
First of all, a signal to people with HIV, which is, I think, the most important one, by showing someone with HIV who was out there and doing and accomplishing and sort of leading a life while managing this illness. But it also sent a broader signal about sort of recognizing the humanity and the survival and the full lives of people with HIV, not just defining us as a virus.
That kind of stuff matters. And I do think that, you know, Nike deserves some credit in that.
That's New School historian Natalia Melman Petrozella again.
This is the fundamental question that dogs Nike, as so much of its advertising has been so adventurous, is how does their corporate practice match up or not with that?
Petrozella points out that although Nike sold those Liberator shoes back in the 70s, there have been multiple allegations of sexual harassment and gender discrimination at the company. And there were the reports in the early 90s about the company's labor practices abroad. A 1992 Harper's article shared the story of an Indonesian factory worker making 14 cents an hour. Petrozella says two things can be true at once. Nike can be a profit-seeking corporation that's mistreated its employees here and abroad and still deserve credit for running advertisements starring women, the elderly, adaptive athletes, Rick Munoz, and now Colin Kaepernick.
I actually think representation matters. I think the takeaway from kind of the Nike story is that it's really up to us as critical consumers to decide the standards to which we want to hold companies to, because they're not going to do it for us. And actually, as becoming socially conscious becomes more and more marketable, it's probably going to be harder to discern which companies are actually living up to that and for which it is merely window dressing.
As for Rick Munoz, he's 60 years old now. He's been legally married for 10 years, and he's still running 40 to 50 miles a week.
That's Only a Game's Martin Kessler. We'll have a link to Natalia Melman Petrozella's recent Washington Post article about the tensions between Nike's values and reality at onlyagame.org. And for more on the life of Rick Munoz, check out the website Running and Ramblings article, Running for Life.